Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just in Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this season 5, episode 2, I'll be discussing the NBA, what's happening there. I'll be discussing the ever-expanding and growing NFL offseason. And, of course, we will have our Jack's Hot Take. Now, as always, sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just in time sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just in Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform. We growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts. We create the separation. Louisiana till I die. It's where I'm from. I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Ryder, I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just in Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it.
This is Just in Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. I absolutely love that song. We'll get to the point where it's sort of like Undisputed. They don't play the whole Undisputed song. Or sort of like other shows, they don't play the whole song. I just love that song. For the first few episodes, like I laughed. The first month or two, it'll be the whole song. Sorry, guys. Kind of get used to it. My guy, B-Roy, again, crushed it. Of course, again, I'll put the link to his latest EP in the title description, or in the episode description, rather. Also, some other housekeeping news. The YouTube show is back. The Just in Time Sports YouTube is officially up. I didn't got to say it in the intro, so I'll say it now. Like, create, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, YouTube will have the kind of the Jack Cap. So, like I said, as a nightcap, we'll have kind of the Jack Cap or JTS After Dark. So, we will definitely be discussing once a week. We'll have the video show, and of course, we'll have the audio show weekly as well. With basketball season, the audio show is a little sporadic. You know, I like doing the audio show normally on Monday, on Tuesday nights. Comes out to you guys on Wednesday, kind of as a review slash preview kind of situation with basketball season. It's a little bit more sporadic. So, I'm recording to this now. Saturday afternoon, you guys are here Sunday morning, but we'll do the audio show every week, we'll do the video show every week. You should get the video show on Saturday-ish. You should get the audio show sometime on the weekend as well, so you probably get the audio show and the video show right around the same time. And of course, if that becomes overload for you guys, we can easily adjust one of the two shows. More than likely, the audio show, I could start recording on Tuesdays and put out on Wednesdays. I could do it during football season. If that is more comfortable for you guys, let me know. DM me, at me. Tell me what works for you guys. But enough of the housekeeping stuff. Let's get right into the show. Of course, we're going to have the NBA. Of course, we're going to have the NFL offseason. And then we'll have Jack's Hot Take. But jump right into the NBA. How we always start every NBA segment. We have the standings going into Saturday's slate of games, including a huge Warriors-Lakers matchup that we will discuss. But out east, we have Boston. Number one, the Bucks at 2, 9.5 games back. The Cavs at 3, 10 games back. So they're only a half game back from the Bucks. The Knicks at 4, 13 games back. The Magic at 5, 13.5 games back. The Pacers at 6, 15.5 games back. And in the play-in tournament right now, you have Miami, 16 games back. Philly, 16 games back. So Philly is at 8, and they are a half game back from 6th. And not even being in the play-in tournament, despite the injury to Joel Embiid. And then the last two teams in the play-in tournament, they have no chance of not being 9-10. It's Chicago at 9, 20.5 back. And Atlanta at 10, 23.5 back. Which I think, out of those two things, Chicago has the best chance of getting out. LaVine is hurt for Chicago, but Trae Young's hurt for Atlanta. So I think Chicago will probably beat Atlanta in the 9-10. And then, let's say they catch the Sixers with no Embiid. And, you know, the Chicago may end up sneaking in and be rewarded with Boston, right? So, positive there, but, you know. But we'll have to definitely see on that. And then, of course, shift out to the West. You have Denver, number one. Thunder, half game back. The Timberwolves, 1.5 games back. The Clippers, 4.5 games back. The Pelicans, 6.5 games back. And Sacramento currently is the 6th seed at 8 games back. However, in the play-in tournament, Phoenix is 8 games back as well. So they're tied with Sacramento for the 5th seed. Dallas is 9 games back, only 1 game back from 6. The Lakers are 11 games back, only 3 games back from 6. And despite the turmoil of the Warriors season, the Warriors are 12 games back, only 4 games back from 6. So you have about 15 games left in the season for most people. Most people have anywhere from 17 to 13 games left in their season. And to look at these standings, a lot has happened. I spoke about the East a little bit. The Boston Celtics have won the conference. It's over, right? They have a 10-game lead and the tiebreaker with 15 left. Like, it's over. But if you look at a lot of the stuff at the bottom, has a chance to change. If you are one of the top teams, where you don't want to be is 4-5. And the reason why is that 4-5 matchup gets Boston in the second round. Yes, I'm going to say Boston wins their first round series, either in a sweep or a gentleman's sweep. So the winner of the 4-5 matchup gets Boston in the second round. Where you want to be right now is 2-3, 6-7, because that game faces not Boston in the second round. So that is where, like, if you're Milwaukee, you're fine where you are. Milwaukee and Cleveland are fine. Now, you'd want that home court in the second round, so you'd want that second seed. But as long as you don't slip to the 4 line, you don't have to deal with Boston to the Eastern Conference Finals at the earliest, if at all. Instead, you can play each other. So, like, the Cavs and the Bucks are truly, in my opinion, fighting for home court in the second round. I think the Bucks are going to destroy whoever is in the 7th seed. Not necessarily destroy. If it's Miami, you know Miami comes in the playoffs. They're going to destroy the Sixers. I don't think Embiid plays the rest of the season. So for some reason, if the Sixers end up the 7th seed and Milwaukee gets them, they're going to run through them. But I do think Milwaukee and Cleveland currently do make it out of their first round series, and they play each other. I think Boston runs through whoever they're in the 8th. New York, Orlando, if the season ended today, would be the matchup. That's a very interesting playoff series. You get a lot of credit for New York. They had that streak where they held 3 teams under 80 points for that has not happened in like 20 years. You've got Jalen Brunson. You've got Julius Randle. You've got Isaiah Hartenstein. You've got these guys. However, that Orlando Magic team is really good. They have Jalen Suggs. They have Cole Anthony. Of course, they have Paolo Banchero. Paolo Banchero is averaging 23-7-4, just right around there. On more than 48-49% shooting. And, like, he's only getting better. He's only getting tougher. He's made a game winner this season. He's only getting better as the time progresses. And he's going to be a person that I don't think anybody in New York matches up with. He's too fast for Julius Randle. He's too big for Jalen Brunson. He's too quick for Isaiah Hartenstein. He's just too physically strong for Evan Fournier. Like, I don't know who on New York matches up with Paolo Banchero, but Orlando can throw a lot of bodies at New York guys. Brunson can see Paolo for a couple possessions. He can see Wagner for a couple possessions. He can see Suggs. He can see Anthony. And then you got Julius Randle. He's got to see Paolo and Wagner and the rest of those guys that are just big and physical and long in Orlando. That's going to be a very interesting series. I think Cavs-Pacers is intriguing. You've got the Cavs who starting 5 doesn't work. Mainly because Evan Mobley sucks. But their starting five doesn't work. Okay. I won't say he sucks. He's a disappointment, right? So I'm not going to say he sucks. He's just not nowhere near what he was brought out to be. And so their starting five doesn't work. When it's both bigs and both guards, it doesn't matter who the fifth person is, their net rating is way down. And then when one of them, when they were doing one guard and one big, their net rating shot through the roof. When they added a guard back, it dips. When they added Mobley back to Allen, the bottom fell out. Like, it just doesn't work space-wise because both guards are little and both bigs can't shoot. So it's like you've all of a sudden transported them back to the 80s. It doesn't work very well. You got little guards and non-shooting bigs. The spacing is horrible, and they're getting absolutely wrecked on defense. And it just does not work. And then on the other side, you've got the Pacers, who have mightily improved their defense right around the trade deadline, right around when they traded Buddy Hield. Not saying those two things are connected, but it's incredibly convenient how it worked out. The Pacers defense has drastically improved, but their scoring is down, as it's scoring throughout the league, and we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. But that'll be a very interesting series because the Pacers can't get up and down. You got a guy like Tyrese Haliburton, who, to me, is first-team All-NBA. If he's not first-team All-NBA, you got to have a hell of a justification for him not to be. He's positionless now. All-NBA team is the top 15 players that qualify, of course, with the 65 games, and we'll talk about that as well in a couple of minutes. But I think Haliburton's a first-team All-NBA kind of guy. If not, he's locked second-team. He's the best player in the series. I think he's a little bit better than Donovan Mitchell right now. That'll be in a hell of a playoff series. Flipping over to the West, you have the Denver Nuggets, Oklahoma City Thunder, and Minnesota Timberwolves within two games of each other with 15 left. Like, it is a war for the number one seed in the West. And the number one seed in the West, I don't think is a prize. If I am a Western top three guy, I want the third seed right now. Why? It gets you away from Denver. To me, I think Denver isn't going to hold it. The Nuggets have flipped the switch. Jokic is playing at about half NBA speed. He's doing the little flip lobs to Gordon. He's doing the little soundboard shuffle. He's sliding through the lane and flipping up shots left and right. He's flipped the switch at this point to the playoff mode. And when he does that, I don't see anybody even attempting to beat. I don't see them, beating them four times in seven games. I just don't. So I think they're ultimately going to end up winning the West in the regular season, right? So then they leave the Thunder and the Timberwolves. Thunder have a one-game lead on the Timberwolves. I'm not sure about the tiebreaker, but the Thunder is one game up right now on the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves, of course, don't have Karl Anthony Towns. He's coming back from season dealing with injuries. I think he has a surgery. He's had a surgery. But they don't have Karl Anthony Towns. The Oklahoma City Thunder are the youngest team in the NBA. The youngest good team in the NBA, rather. I think their average age of starters is like 25. They're the youngest good team in the NBA. Of course, they're the youngest great team in the NBA. And so they're sitting right now in the two seed. If I'm them, I try to get the one. I try to make sure I know every single time I play a playoff series, unless it's in the finals, I have home court advantage. I have game one and game seven in my building. So if I'm the Thunder, I go for it. But if you look at the Thunder, what is the reward for the potential number one seed? I bring my name down to the play-in immediately for the West. The play-in tournament consists of teams that have either Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, or Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, or LeBron James, Anthony Davis, or Steph Curry. That's your reward if you're the one seed or the two seed. You have to face one of those four teams. I don't think the Warriors are going to make it. I just don't. Steph's by himself at this point. Draymond is shelling himself. Kuminga's not ready. Klay's are shelling himself. They got rid of Jordan Poole. And so it's just, they're not ready. I don't think they're good enough, right? So that leaves the KD, Bradley Beal, Booker trio, Luka and Kyrie with Daniel Chamberlain, and aka Daniel Gafford, or LeBron and AD. That's your reward. It's wild to think one of those teams I named won't be in the playoffs. But that is your reward. And I say it won't be in the playoffs, but Phoenix is currently tied with Sacramento for the sixth seed. So if Sac gets in that mix, they could bump Sac all the way out. But that notwithstanding, if you're the one seed, do you really want your prize to be Anthony Davis and LeBron James? No. Do you really want your prize to be KD, Booker, and Beal? No. How about Luka? How about having to guard Luka and Kyrie seven times? Yeah, that's not fun. Right? So the one seed, to me, unless it's Denver, is a spot you don't want to be in. And then, of course, the Oklahoma City Thunder, let's say you do get the one seed and LeBron and AD walk in your building for game one. Like, that is a disaster waiting to happen. Or KD, Booker, and Bill walk in your building week one. Because the Lakers have a propensity, game one rather. The Lakers have a proven propensity. If you're a smaller, thinner, younger team, they're going to bully you. OKC is on three of them. They're smaller, they're younger, and they're like, you know, they're just not nearly experienced. They're going to get bullied by the Lakers. Every time they play on them, they're just physically beating them up. LeBron does not fear anybody on them in the lane. Anthony Davis does not fear anybody on them in the lane. Rui Hachimura doesn't fear anybody on them in the lane. And so you've got these guys who are just driving repeatedly into the lane. They don't care. They're going to keep coming. And so that is a problem for Oklahoma City. And the Timberwolves have a Karl Anthony Towns problem. Let's say for some reason, somehow, they squeak out the number one seed. Is Cat going to be ready? Or if he's ready, is his first game one of the finals, and staring across the court from him is KD, Booker, and Bill? You know, like, that's a situation that's not tenable for the one seed. Or even the two seeds, going to have to deal with the same exact thing. The three seeds, sweet spot. Right now, it's Sacramento. Like, I'm sorry, but Sacramento, out of all the 10 teams I've named, is the one team you'd rather play. Like, if I gave a poll to everybody else, the other 20 organizations, except for those 10, you just look and say, out of these 10 in a playoff series, who do you want? Probably 16 of them are going to say Sacramento. And I don't know if that's a slander. It is. I'm gonna say, I don't know. It is. It's a slander to the perception of Sacramento. DeMontis Sabonis asked Anthony Davis about it. Like, De'Aaron Fox. Mike Brown's a hell of a coach. Harrison Barnes is still playing good basketball. They've got Keegan Murray. They've got a pretty solid bench. You know, they've got a good GM. They got a good organization. And a raucous crowd whenever they're good. So, Sac, I think, is carrying a reputation of we don't want to play them. To me, the team everybody should want is the Warriors. In a series? Yeah, they're experienced and they know how to win championships, but they're nowhere near what they used to be. Right, so the fear of the Warriors should be very minimal, if at all, in dealing with the Warriors. I probably have Dallas right up there, too. It's pretty much the Luka and Kyrie show. Everybody else is irrelevant, so that'd be my list as well. But just looking at matches that are pretty locked in, Pelicans and Clippers are fairly locked in. Can, you know, Sacramento, Phoenix catch New Orleans? Of course they could, but Phoenix is one of the tougher schedules, if not the tougher schedule. They have the toughest schedule of all the contenders. I believe the Utah Jazz are the only team with a tougher schedule left throughout the rest of the season. And the Jazz are actively trying to lose basketball games, so they don't really count. And so can Phoenix or Sacramento catch New Orleans? They're only a game and a half back with 15 left. Of course they could, right? But same thing, Indiana could catch Orlando. They're only two games back. Miami and Philly only 2.5 games back. So we're going to keep it like that. The playoff ends today. It'd be Philly. It'd be Clippers and Pelicans. We just saw that game last night. Now, it was without Harden. It was without Westbrook. But the Pelicans made a statement. That was the kind of win that even with, if it was just Paul George and Kawhi, two of the best 15 players on the earth, they would still, the Pelicans would find a way to lose that game, right? And Zion had 34-7, quelling a lot of the noise about his weight. You know, it's a travesty, it's a tragedy, it's a miscarriage of the opportunity, it's a miscarriage of the role, the fact that guys like Stephen A. Smith, when New Orleans is 40-26, 14 games above 500, fifth in the West, they're legitimately within shouting distance of fourth in the West, is being treated and being relegated to, oh yeah, Zion's fat. And the chefs still love him. And then listing all of the issues, pains, and plan that the Pelicans have gone through throughout the years. Like, and yet, you're propping up the Warriors, talking about they're dangerous, and, you know, and the Lakers and stuff like that. And it's like, you have a team that's actually one of the most dangerous teams in the West, because they have a freaking 280-pound bowling ball no one can deal with. There's a Brandon Ingram who's an absolute bucket. CJ McCollum's one of the smoothest players in the league, probably second behind Paul George. Jonas Valanciunas is one of the most underrated players in the league. He's physical. Herb Jones is the best wing defender in the league. Argue with your grandmother. And, you know, they have depth everywhere. Dyson Daniels is on the way back. You know, so you got all these different pieces in New Orleans that all kind of came out last night against the Clippers. And without Norman Powell raining a few threes, the Clippers get blown out. And so New Orleans had a great game. Big shout out to them, as I'm a Pelicans fan, so maybe a little partial to them. I don't care at all. But that is what's happening right now with the standings. Like I said, we're about 15 games to go. All right, so the MVP race to me is a two-horse race. It's between Jokic and SGA. Tatum has undersold too much in big games for him to be in this discussion. Giannis's team is too fluctuating. So to me, between OKC, the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Denver Nuggets, Nikola Jokic. Now, Jokic, if he wins his third MVP, enters the inner room in terms of awards. Now, I don't think all time he enters that room yet. He's the first ballot Hall of Famer, of course, as is. But I think with three MVPs, he enters a very small room. Kareem has six MVPs. Michael Jordan, I believe, has five or six. LeBron has four. Larry has three. Magic, I don't know if Magic has the MVPs. Steph, I believe, has three. But it is a very small list of people with three MVPs. Especially three MVPs in an NBA championship. Especially he can win three MVPs and two NBA championships, and the list shrinks. You know, and Jokic is just, like I said, he's flipped the gear. He's doing the soundboard shuffle, hitting crazy one-legged lean back shots. You have all kind of stuff happening with him and Gordon, him and Jamal Murray are rolling. But then you got SGA, man. And I spoke about that Thunder team. They're the youngest contenders. Their average age of starting lineup is like 25. I don't believe they're starting anybody over 27. You got Chet Holmgren, who's a rookie. He's like 20 years old. You got J-Dub, Lou Dort. Like, you have guys who will be household names. Some of them are household names, but the ringleader to the trapeze circus is SGA. When he's on the floor, they look like one of the best teams in the league, if not the best teams in the league. When he's off the floor, they look like a bunch of 24-year-olds playing basketball in the NBA. It don't look that great, right? So to me, if I had a vote right now, I would vote SGA. And how I put this was, if you take them off this season and you put them with a replacement level position, how would the teams look? So it's presto change-o, Nikola Jokic and Nick Claxton. And presto change-o, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Tyus Jones. How would the teams look? If you turn Nikola Jokic into Nick Claxton, they are a play-in team. Honestly, they're the Kings. Just gonna be honest with you, they're the Kings. They have a really, really good point guard. Fast point guard who can get shots up and score. De'Aaron Fox and Jamal Murray. They'd have a run and dunk center. A run and dunk big. They'd have a do everything kind of forward guy, Sabonis and Gordon. You know, and they'd have their shooters everywhere, and they'd have their experienced head coaches. They'd be the Kings. If you press those change of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Tyus Jones, they are literally the San Antonio Spurs with slightly better talent. And I do mean slightly. I think the gap between Wemby and Chet's pretty large, but J-Dub is like the second best player, the third best player if you check out SGA. Dort's probably the fourth best player. Like, so, because he has better players than the Spurs, they literally become the Spurs. There's a tall, lanky center who can do everything. There's a point guard who is very replacement level, but highly thought of and highly considered, highly favored in the NBA. You've got a bunch of skill guys trying to develop, a bunch of two-way guys trying to develop. Like, the Oklahoma City Thunder literally become the Spurs. if you take it off SGA and replace it with a replacement level point, and that's why I have SGA winning the MVP. The 65 game rule has come up to bite multiple players in the butt. So, the 65 game rule, for those of you who did not know, is that the NBA instituted a rule that in order for a player to qualify for postseason awards, every single award but the rookie of the year, they must play and be credited for 65 games in a season. Or they will be deemed ineligible for these awards. So that's MVP, clutch player, that's first team on the NBA, that's all rookie, I believe. I think the rookie team has restrictions, but it's first team on its team, it's all NBA. It is any of the individual awards not named rookie of the year, all the all rookie teams, they are hitting those rules. So you got guys who in previous years would still get all NBA even if they, you know, missed 20 games, like Joel Embiid would probably still sneak third team all NBA even hurt. You got guys like Devin Booker, I think he's really, really close to the ineligible list. Jimmy Butler's really, really close to the ineligible list. Tyrese Haliburton spoke about the fact that he was dealing with something and knew about the 65 game rule, and so he kept pushing it. Like, and then what happens is it affects the money. The money aspect is the Supermax contract or the Rookie Max extension, the Rose Rule contract. The Supermax contract should be called the Kevin Durant Rule. They like the way the Rookie Max contract is considered the Rose Rule, or it's called the Rose Rule. So it's called the Rose Rule after Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose won the MVP at like 22 years old of the Chicago Bulls. Pretty much, it was said he can't be maxed out like regular players. Like, he can't be maxed out like regular rookies. He's won an MVP already on his rookie contract. Like, he deserves more of the pot. So, in order to not give him a full-blown 30% max, they went with a 25% max. So, 25% max of the cap. So, you can have 25% of the cap allotted to one player. And then they went back and added all these rules. So, if you win an MVP, you get X amount of All-NBAs, X amount of individual awards, X amount of defensive player of the years, whatever, you will qualify for the Rose Rule on your first max contract, which means that instead of 20% of the cap, you can get 25% of the cap. Cool. So your next max contract is under Supermax guidelines. And you'll hear guys sign, I know you hear a lot of time for the Rose Rule guys, you'll hear they sign for 5 years, $200 million, but it can grow to $240 million, $45 million if they hit the requirements. For the Supermax contract, there's a requirement as well. So many All-Stars, so many All-Pros, all in the NBA, so on and so forth. However, this rule was instituted because of Kevin Durant. So when Kevin Durant was going into the final year of his Oklahoma City contract, OKC offered him a deal, he passed on it. OKC did not have really the ability to offer him substantially more financial incentive to stay like anybody else before free agency. So he goes into free agency, he walks into Golden State free, leaving OKC with nothing but Westbrook. And so they put in the Supermax contract because Kevin Durant would have been easily Supermax eligible. They would have offered it to him. He would have had to look, you know, tens of millions of dollars in the face and say no, which everybody knew he wasn't going to do that. So that was what was happening and why the invention of the Supermax contract exists. So I say all that to say, with the NBA 65 game rule, that's affecting certain people who could either wouldn't have qualified, like Tyrese Maxey could be Supermax eligible now, or would have qualified potentially in the future because they did not play enough games to meet the barrier to qualify for these awards, such as All-NBA, MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, etc. And lastly, Ben Simmons has undergone surgery on his back to try and fix the nerve impingement in his back. Let me pull it up to make sure I get the correct word. So Ben Simmons underwent a microscopic partial discectomy to try and repair and relieve the nerve impingement in his back. He dealt with back issues for quite a long time. It kind of reminds me of what Michael Porter Jr. had to deal with coming to the league, a whole bunch of back surgeries. Now Ben Simmons is working on his back. the back is your life, guys. Like, your body is your life in professional sports. Your back is your oil, your motor, and your transmission. If your back is messed up, you're not going anywhere. And so let's hope and pray Ben Simmons gets fully recovered and he's able to continue to play in the NBA. But that is all I have for the NBA today. And now we are shifting to the NFL and talk about what's going down there. Welcome back into the show. The NFL. Wow. Honestly, kudos to the NFL. Because the NBA has been kicking the NFL's butt as far as offseason. The NBA, the trade deadline for the NBA is a show. Like, literally, multiple shows on multiple networks do, like, live trade deadline shows. And they'll start from, like, the day before, and they'll just like run through, you know, the next day or 2 days after, reaction shows, live at the deadline shows. Like, it's insane, right? And now the NBA has this thing called pre-agency and all the other stuff, right? But the NBA has monetized and marketed the offseason, the part where it's getting nerdy, like people just show up and see a guy on the team and be like, oh, okay, that happened. Like, no, the NBA. The free agency starting is a show. Again, shows on multiple networks. The trade deadline is a show. It shows on multiple networks. It leads my show. It's when my fingers are most active. Like, it's a thing, right? And then the NBA, the NFL goes, the copycat league it is. It copies the schemes again at one point. The NFL is such a copycat league. At one point, most of the league snapped the ball to the running back on a consistent basis. Like, it's a thing, right? So the NFL looked and went, huh. We're the biggest TV show in America. We always have top ratings. We always have figured out a way to change the schedule. Churches have changed their schedule to fit us. The calendar is built around football season. People have now gotten married in certain times of the year because of us. What if we did what they did? The only thing the NBA has over us consistently is that they kill the holidays. The NBA, the NFL Thanksgiving, the NBA had Christmas. They would split New Year Day. The NFL might do Christmas Eve. The NBA would do Halloween and Martin Luther King Day. Like, they kind of split them out, right? And then the NFL started doing Christmas games. The NBA didn't like it. But you know nobody. Now the NFL started marketing their offseason and their transaction periods. The NFL trade deadline week was like, again, multiple shows on multiple networks. Ultimately, it wasn't nearly the fireworks, but it was a thing. Now, the NFL free agency has been multiple shows on multiple networks, leading, you know, it's led multiple shows. It was basically the lead on the video show on Just Time Sports YouTube, which should be out soon. Like, NFL free agency leads a lot of the conversation. If you look at the Just Time Sports social media, I won't even venture to guess how many posts are about free agency in general, but just scroll and it is NFL free agent city. I'm doing it now and I'm still scrolling, and most of it is NBA NFL free agency. There's the occasional retirement like Derek Watt. There is Dave Bakhtiari leaving Green Bay. You know, there's some stuff that breaks. There's a fine in here, Rudy Gobert. But a vast majority of it, since free agency started, has been free agency, NFL free agency. Great job by the NFL attempting to level the playing field when it comes down to transaction points in the period. And it was helped the fact that it was a very insane free agency. Just look at the quarterback carousel. Adam Schefter did a great job of tweeting it all out in one tweet. I have all the movement all spread all over my stuff, but he did it all in one tweet. And I will try to do this as succinctly as possible. Jimmy Garoppolo went to the Rams. Kenny Pickett traded to the Eagles. Sam Howell traded to the Seahawks. Desmond Ridder traded to the Cardinals. Joe Flacco signed with the Colts. Gardner Minshew signed with the Raiders. Jacoby Brissett signed back with the Patriots. Sam Darnold signed with the Vikings. Drew Locke traded to the Giants. Kirk Cousins signed a massive deal with the Falcons. Baker Mayfield re-signed with the Buccaneers. Russell Wilson signed with the Steelers. Jameis Winston signed with the Browns. Marcus Mariota signed with the Commanders. Tyrod Taylor signed with the Jets. Mason Rudolph traded to the Titans. Mitch Trubisky signed with the Bills. Whew! That's just the quarterbacks. And you would think the NFL would have a bigger free agency period than the NBA. Think about it. The NBA, it's 30 teams. It's 15 players. It's 450 of the best players in the world. Only about 70 of them truly matter in free agency. Only about 20 of them ever happens. However, the NBA has kind of killed its own offseason through some of the CBA stuff, through the contracts, supermaxes, the salary cap, now the tax aprons. Like they're kind of killing their own free agency, mainly because they were killing their own smart markets. See Kevin Durant walking from OKC to Golden State for nothing. That was starting to happen more and more. Now, at least now you got to be traded. I'm not going to dive into that. This is the NFL segment. But the NFL has 53 players on roster, on the active roster, another 12 to 15 guys on the practice squad, and there's 32 teams. So the NBA has 450 players in the league at one time. The NFL, if you count 65 people, let's just say 53 active man, 12 practice squad, has 2,080. Four times, just about, as many people in the league at one time. You would think, logically, that they would have a bigger free agency because there's more of them. But the NFL is a lot of resign, a lot of guys want to move, a lot of the NFL is about scheme on the team. If I like the way this position coach or this coordinator uses me, I'll sign with this team to stay in the city for a couple less million dollars. Like Juwan Bentley, for instance, he stayed with New England. And he turned down multiple years with more guaranteed money because he likes the way New England works. He likes the way that we use them on defense. He likes the area. He's safe. You know, so you have stuff happening like that all over the league. That's usually happens a lot. It's been a lot of movement. Including, like I said, we switched the quarterbacks. Now let's move to the running backs. The running backs for the first time. Oh my God, since the running back slander started, they were able to move freely. Remember last year, it was like major, amazing running back class, and then like all of them got franchise tagged. Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, like all of them got tagged. Alvin Kamara, his contract was renegotiated with the Saints. Like all of them got tagged or stayed with him at one time, and it went from this really, really high wild anticipation to bottoming out, right? And so this year, Bill, we come back. It's like a roller coaster. We're coming back up the tracks. And then we start hearing great news. This person's not being tagged. Wait. They're all going to be free? So we get to finally find out what the market is? Because Jonathan Taylor re-signed with the Colts last offseason on a deal. So, but then it was like, okay. So now we're coming, and we're finally going to find out what the market is. Everybody's excited. No one has figured out what the market is on running backs because they've never been free, especially this many top guys at one time. Saquon Barkley, boom, landed the Eagles. 3 years, $37 million, I believe $23-odd million guaranteed. So that's the first deal. I'm sorry. Whoa, okay. So now, not only is the fact that they're moving, they're going to move with, like, purpose. They're going to move and change the landscape because Saquon Barkley to the Eagles alters the landscape. 3 years, it was 3 years, $37.75 million, worth up to $46.75 million with $26 million fully guaranteed. So it's like, boom, okay. So now it's a thing, right? But he wasn't even the first one. Josh Jacobs signed. His deal was weird. It only had, like, basically 1 year of guaranteed money. But it was like it was a salary cap. It was like it was the franchise tag multiple years with very little guarantee. But it was like $12 million guaranteed in it. And of course, Josh Jacobs, he lands on Green Bay with subsequently packed out Aaron Jones out of Green Bay. Saquon Barkley landed with the Eagles. Joe Mixon ends up being released by the Bengals, only to then, before he is released, the Texans jumps in and trades for him and immediately gives him a big contract. I'm trying to find the dollar amount. Oh, for you guys right now, they gave him 3 years, $27 million with $13 million guaranteed. The Green Bay Packers re-signed A.J. Dillon. And then, of course, in the middle of all of that, Derrick Henry signs with the Baltimore Ravens, to me, on a deal that was way less than market value, and it was done for design to win the championship. It was 2 years, $20 million, worth up to $20 million, with $9 million fully guaranteed in year one. Less than the franchise act. But I believe this was done, because if you think about it, Saquon Barkley can go 3 years up to 46.7. Now, he'll likely get a couple of incentives, so 3 years, I say around 42. That's still $14 million a year, with $26 million guaranteed. He's got more guaranteed money than Derrick Henry's worth max contract, right? But I think it's two different things. I think, one, Saquon Barkley, A, is younger, right? Derrick Henry's a 30-year-old running back. Never showed him signs of wearing down, but he's a 30-year-old running back. Number two, he went to a team that was in immediate championship contention with not a lot of cap space. Derrick Henry went to Baltimore. Not a lot of cap space there. So he went to a team where he can immediately start to try to win a championship. Philly is in championship contention, sure, but their situation was a little bit different. Saquon's got a better deal than Henry. Henry, I believe, probably wanted to go to Baltimore. Was able to sign on with Baltimore. He still got more guaranteed money than, well, he got less guaranteed money than Josh Jacobs. So Derrick Henry got the lowest amount of years of any of the big three running backs. He got the lowest amount of money of any of the big three running backs. And he got the lowest amount of guarantees of any of the big three running backs. He's the best of three. If I had to pick a running back right now, I'm like, who would I pick in the league to be running back? Christian McCaffrey's one. Derrick Henry's probably two. Like, he's better than Saquon. He's better than Josh Jacobs. Production's been better. His health has been better. But I think he just wanted to go to Baltimore and win a championship. He's also playing with the most expensive quarterback. Hurts doesn't have Lamar Jackson's deal. Jordan Love's on his rookie contract. So he's playing with the most expensive quarterback as well. I legitimately think he just wants to go try to win a championship. And he's looking at the fact of, I can go to Baltimore and win. I can go to Baltimore and win right now. And, you know, probably looking at Baltimore had a more consistent running game with their legs. Lamar's not running as much. It adds even more danger to it. You can't box me in because he's coming on the outside. That sort of thing. So, very interesting contract from Derrick Henry. I think it was ring motivated, the fact that they kind of deal, but he couldn't go like 1 year, $3 million to the Chiefs. You know, like, he couldn't do that. The NFLPA would have like blocked that. But what he did was basically sign a 1 year deal with an option on it. I'm sure if they go and they win and he runs for 1,300 yards and they win a Super Bowl, and I'm sure they'll rip that year up and extend him out and all kind of stuff. You know, the Ravens take care of their own. So I'm sure, like I said, he runs for 1,400 yards, 12 touchdowns. He's one of the better, you know, first and second team All-Pro running back, and they go win a Super Bowl. Like, he's going to get taken care of. If he has a 900-yard year for 6 touchdowns, and they lose in the second round, losing the division round, like, he may not come back that second year for year two, right? So, it is a situation that it's kind of a prove it deal. It's kind of a let me show you deal. And it's an opportunity for him to go win a championship. The Dallas Cowboys have released Leighton Vander Esch and Michael Gallup. Leighton Vander Esch, potentially career could be over. His latest neck concussion injury situation could have possibly ended his career, unfortunately. So we're definitely going to keep our eye on Leighton Vander Esch. He came into the league with neck concerns and head concerns. He carved out a pretty decent career. He's made some money in the league. Not probably what he could have had he not had the neck concerns. But he is, unfortunately, probably going to retire. Because at this point, if you're a team, he's got in league 2018, but if you're a team, what do you do with him? How willing are you to give him money? You know, his career earnings, I'm looking on SpotRac right now. His career earnings over 6 seasons is about $18.1 million. He lives in Texas, no state taxes. He probably had $11, $12 million in his bank account. If he's half decent money, man, he can live the rest of his life incredibly comfortably. From 30 years old on, with, you know, $12 million in his bank account. He probably spent two of it already. $10 million in his account. Get a nice house. If you live in Texas, get a great house. Get a couple of nice cars. And do TV stuff to kind of supplement your income or go into coaching, whatever. But I don't think his playing career is going to go any further. I hope it does, though. He's a pretty good linebacker when he's healthy. And then Michael Gallup was released. He's already taken visits to multiple teams, or is scheduled to take visits to multiple teams. So he'll be back on the field sooner rather than later. Also, in Cowboy news, Tyron Smith is going to the New York Jets. It's a one-year contract worth up to $20 million. In a situation where the Jets needed a blindside blocker, they had some money to spend. Tyron Smith was looking for a payday and needed somebody to protect. So he's going to go there to the New York Jets for 1 year, up to $20 million. So that's three big cogs. No one going to be back in that Dallas Cowboy locker room. Also, they don't add Derrick Henry. They did add Eric Kendricks, which kind of spelled the end for Leighton Vander Esch, in my opinion. They did add Eric Kendricks, and they re-signed their long snapper, which is pretty much the extent of the Dallas Cowboys offseason. So they have been very, very quiet. However, I believe they're prepping. Dak Prescott is looking for his money. You're looking at CeeDee Lamb. He's trying to get his money. So I think they're prepping for the re-sign thing. And Dallas is another organization. I spoke about Baltimore earlier. If you get good with Dallas and you do good in Dallas, they take care of their own. So I just think at this point, Dallas is prepping to take care of their own rather than spend on outside guys. And so that is why Dallas has been really quiet. The Patriots have been really quiet still. My Patriots have not done much of anything. Not great. It feels like the Bill Belichick era without Bill Belichick, honestly. It's like I can't even look forward to us being highly coached. We're very well coached because, well, we don't have any good coaches. Or we don't have any proven coaches. Our head coach has never coached a game in his life as a head coach. Alex Van Pelt bounced around the league for a reason. I got faith in him as a teacher and an organizer. I just, to be determined. Elliott Wolf, first time as GM, looking like the Packers era. Whole lot of non-receivers and whole lot of non-quarterbacks. It's just, I trust he can draft the quarterback. About it. He's not really a free agent guy, but neither were the Packers. And I think this is a craft issue, Robert and Bill, or Robert and Bob, Robert and I can't think of the boy, Jonathan, craft issue. When you guarantee money in the NFL, you have to take that money out and put it in escrow. It's guaranteed. Regardless of what happens, this money's coming, right? Because it's guaranteed, especially fully guaranteed. It has to go into escrow immediately. And so owners have to have the cash to put in escrow. And they have to be willing to put said cash into escrow. So if you have an owner that says, I'm not going to guarantee that much money on contracts, you can't even go to a player and offer him guaranteed money, give a lot of guaranteed money. If the player accepts and the owner balks, A, you can get fired by the owner. B, you can damage reputation with other agents and stuff around the league and not get even average players, So I think it's a craft issue. I think they're too highly involved. I think they're too unwilling to spend guaranteed dollars in order to make sure that they have the best potential roster they could possibly have with the New England Patriots, because we came in with $100 million. We re-signed a bunch of our own guys, got a couple of solid pieces. We still have like $60 million in cap space left. Like, it's not like we're not. It's not like we all spent all our cap. Like, nope. Still got like $60 million left. And you've got stuff like Mike Williams out there. Michael Gallup is out there. There's the T. Higgins was traded for him. There's a lot of talent. Da'Vion Clowney's floating around. Like, there's a lot of talent that's out there that I feel like the Patriots aren't taking advantage of. And so that could be an issue quickly, sooner rather than later, especially if you're going to draft the quarterback at three. Washington has pretty much told you they're going to draft the quarterback. They traded Sam Howell and they signed Marcus Mariota. If I'm the New England Patriots, I'm scouting the heck out of Drake May. I don't want it to be Drake May. I want it to be Jaden Daniels. But the Washington Commanders signed a veteran mobile quarterback who's known for being really, really smart and knowing the system and can teach. There is a young mobile quarterback that can use some teaching in the NFL level. called Jaden Daniels. He's the only one that looks and plays like Marcus Mariota. And who was the one team that signed him? The team right in front of us. So personally, I'm going to think I'm going to have Drake May as my quarterback. Whatever, right? But if it is Drake May, you saw his numbers dip at UNC his junior year when he didn't have as good of an offensive line. He didn't have as good of receivers. Like, maybe you should try and get some of those things right so that when he shows up, he's comfortable. That's just me. But hey, what do I know? I'm just a guy holding out. And then, of course, retirement news. I spoke about Derek White earlier. Aaron Donald has retired. To me, the greatest defensive tackle ever played the game. Older generation may have their pick, but to me, Aaron Donald's the best DT I've ever seen with my own eyes. So he's the best defensive tackle ever played the game, in my opinion. Just like Bears fan has a running back case for 10 years, Aaron Donald has a DT tackle case for 10 years. He played 10 years in the NFL, all with the Rams organization. He was a Pro Bowler every single year. He was an All-Pro 8 out of 10 years. He won Defensive Player of the Year 3 times. He's a Super Bowl champion. To me, he should have been Super Bowl MVP. He's the only reason why Joe Burrow doesn't have a ring. I'm just going to be honest with you. Joe Burrow went through the playoffs with the most sacked quarterback ever in the playoffs. He got sacked like 8 times against Houston and still won. Like, he was close to just having this legacy run of beat the hell up and still won. And on the last play, Joe Burrow has Ja'Marr Chase up the right sideline. Chase beats Ramsey. And Chase going up the right sideline, and Joe's about to uncork it. And who sacks him in about 2 seconds? Aaron Donald. To win the game. He sacks him. He gets up, rips off his helmet, and points to the ring. Points to his ring finger. Like, he locked it down. There was a portion he was going to walk after that, but the Rams gave him money, absurd amount of money, to come back, and he came back. But now he walks away. There's no press conference. There's no retirement tour. There's no none of that. He's simply, like, even Jason Kelce, to me, had the most coolest, like, I'm an understated guy. I'm for understated press conference. Came in a cutoff shirt with taped ankles because the guy who was known to take his ankles for years had cancer, I believe, and so wasn't there for something from his last game. So Kelce let him tape him up one more time. Like, cool stuff like that for Jason Kelce, right? Aaron Donald's the most undercover star in the NFL, like, ever. I think it's a Charger thing, because Herbert is like that, too. It wasn't until recently Herbert was, like, popping out of commercials. But, like, he would like, hold his head up in passing cameras at training camp. Like, Herbert's just not that guy, right? Aaron Donald knows no announcement, no preemptiveness, no rumor. He put out a statement on social media. That was it. And then it came out a couple hours later, like, he's not even going to do a press conference. Like, no, this is it. It's the last time we'll see Aaron Donald. He may pop on the sideline of the Rams game. He may go to training camp. Maybe. Right? We may not see Aaron Donald's face again until he's inducted to the Hall of Fame. Like, real talk. We may not see his face again until he's inducted to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Like, that's how undercover he is. It's an incredible career. Congratulations on him. You want to know how you know you're good? And it's all two little anecdotes on Aaron Donald's career. One in career and one after. Already, I got one after, right? There's the audio of Aaron Donald running at Geno Smith and Geno yelling on the field, "Oh my God!" and just throwing the ball. Like, he just chucked it. He got rid of it. Like, screw the grounding, whatever. Like, he got out of town and he yells, "Oh my God!" and then, like, chucks the ball. Right? And then there's the Kyler Murray tweeting under Aaron Donald's post, "Thank God," in all caps. That pretty much describes Aaron Donald, right? In his career. And of course, he came in famous. He tackled the quarterback and the running back on the read option in college. He said 10 years in the league, Pro Bowl every year. The only person to ever do that besides him is Barry Sanders, who also played 10 years in the league. He was an 8-time All-Pro, 3-time Defensive Player of the Year. One of the greatest tacticians at the defensive lineman spot ever. There's a video now going around of him on I Am Athlete breaking down how he breaks down film with him. He breaks down with him by himself, with his D-line coach, and maybe another time by himself with somebody else. He breaks the film down 3 times. The technicality that he went about, and the tactiveness that he went about playing the defensive line position showcase on Sundays. He's absolutely wrecked the league for 10 years. But up next, we will have Jack's Hot Take, which will be a discussion about how women's college basketball has clearly surpassed the men's game. Welcome back into the show, and now we're going to discuss really quickly how the women's game is substantially better than the men's game in college basketball. And for those of you who disagree, for those of you who, you know, are stuck in their ways, for lack of a better term, and they're going to say, you know, Justin, you know, you're insane, right? Like, there's no way the women's game could make up for the blue bloods of the college basketball and Kansas and Kentucky and UCLA and I ask you this. I want you to name me five college basketball players that are not on your favorite team. Because that's cheating. Everybody can name five players on their own favorite teams. Five players not on your favorite team. And I want to name five girls players not on your favorite team. And I want to think about them at the same time and write them down. I will bet you 9 out of 10 people listening to this will get the women's five first. Because I know doing it, I got the women's five before I got the two guys. I'm an LSU fan. I'm a North Carolina fan. So I went to LSU and I grew up a North Carolina fan. Like, so it's hard for me to... Anybody outside of them, too. I got Zach Eadney, the big guy out of Purdue. I got Rob Dillingham at Kentucky. Oh, I got Isaiah Collier, Bronny James. And I have no earthly idea. Seriously. None. I can't think of a fifth person. At all. Like, I can't if I include a UNC and LSU. Seriously, like, who's the best player at Gonzaga? Like, who's the number one pick in this draft? Like, these are all legitimate questions I have right now. Like, I'd pick Rob Dillingham. He's the only one I know. And I know Zach Eadney. He's not an NBA player. Like, I've watched him play, and I watched the NBA, and I'm like, he can't make it. Right? So, and I know Bronny James, because his name is LeBron James Jr. Are the Boozer Boys? No, the Boozer Boys aren't in yet. The Boozer Boys come with Cooper Flagg. Now, I know a little bit of that group. Switch to the girls' side. It's Caitlin Clark. It's Juju Watkins. I'm an LSU fan, so I'm not going to say injuries. Flajie Johnson, Kayla Williams, Haley Van Lithen, etc. There's Cameron Brink. There's Paige Beckers. You see how this just comes much easier on the women's side? Like, even the LSU, I can name way more LSU female players than I can name LSU male players. On the LSU men's, I got Hannibal, I think's his name. Jalen Cook. I think his name is Mike Williams. They always say Mike Will made it. Like, that's it. Like, you know what I'm saying? I can name the whole starting five and most of the bench from men on the girls' side. Like, women's college basketball has achieved a level. And to be honest, to me, was an unintended major positive of NIL. Because what happens was there would be tournament darlings every single year. I remember it was like it was yesterday. Morgan, I can't think of her name right now. She played on Mississippi State. She was the 5'3" point guard. She hit the shot to win the tournament. Dak Prescott like lost the mind in the crowd. Remember that? There was Arike Ogunbowale. She stole everybody's hearts at Notre Dame. Skylar Diggins stole everybody's hearts at Notre Dame. Like, there was tournament darlings, so you'd find them in the tournament. But then the powers were the powers. There was Tennessee, then there was UConn, then there was Baylor. Like, the powers were the powers. South Carolina. So now, you get a situation, you're at a point now, where the women's game, because of NIL, these women are now in your face. All year. And I was thinking about, man, what if some of these female basketball players that we grew up loving had NIL? What if Maya Moore had NIL? Breanna Stewart had NIL. Skylar Diggins. Skylar Diggins is first gonna do the ninja headband, the head wrap, like the bandana, the headband that you tie in the back. She and the NBA made the ninja headband. I called it the girl headband. Why? Because Skylar Diggins was the first one I've ever seen wear it. And like Nike sold a ton of them, right? Because she wore them. Girls wanted to be her. Guys wanted to date her. Like she wore the headband and literally like her career like catapulted. Those headbands sold through the roof. They broke into the NBA. Everybody like it became a thing, right? It's the ninja headband. What if instead she was the person that when her and Nike came together and they went to the NIL deal for it, she said, give me 3% of every headband sold. So now when they sell for $10 a pop, she gets 30 cents, but they sell 10 million units, she makes 300 bands. You see what I'm saying? They sell $10 million worth of stuff, she gets 300 bands. Or she says, instead of paying me up front, instead of paying me $1 million to run this ad, pay me 200 grand up front and give me 10% of every headband sold in this style. And they sell $15 million, she gets $1.5 million plus the 200 grand they paid her up front. She makes more than $1 million they offered it. You know what I'm saying? It's that sort of thing. Brittany Griner, imagine what she could have done in the space of today's culture. She was LGBT at a Christian, a very Christian school in Baylor. That wasn't something. Remember they made her wear the long sleeves to cover her tattoos? But imagine what she could have done with NIL. Her star power. I'm talking about all these legends in the game. Candace Parker. What she could have done with NIL. So now, back to today's game, the NIL babies are everywhere. Angel Reese, Flaje Johnson. I'm an LSU fan. Anissa Morrow announced her transfer to LSU using her own NIL deal. It wasn't announced through a school. It wasn't announced in a sit down with Holly Rowe, whatever. A little bit of breaking news, actually. Chris Middleton plans to return today for the Milwaukee Bucks against Phoenix. Look at him. But she announced her transfer through her own NIL deal. You have Juju Watkins making a killing at USC already. You have Caitlin Clark making a killing at Iowa. Like, you have all these women making a ton of money in the game. What that's doing is they're making more in college than they would make in the WNBA. So now the WNBA is even less of a prize than it used to be. And now the fact that they are making all this money in college is incentivizing them to stay in school longer. The WNBA rookie contract was like, oh man, and I wish I had the number. I almost had 70K, but that sounds right. But I don't think it was that low. Right? But the WNBA's rookie contract is not the stepping stone of like the NBA rookie contract. The NBA rookie contract, you almost don't even see it. Okay. So the typical rookie salary, the typical rookie contract is 3 years with a team option for the fourth year. Term by the draft position. The rookie contract was $76,535 for the rookie deal. All right, and this was done very recently, article by USA Today, when projecting what Caitlin Clark would make in salary in the WNBA. 77 grand. If she went to school for the right degree, she'd make more making her degree. Seriously, if she went to school for the right degree, if she went to school to be a lawyer or a doctor in the right field, she would walk in from off the court at Iowa, go to the workforce, and make more money than she would in the WNBA. Right? So, that being said, I'm shocked she leaves this year. She can come back to Iowa next year and make $2 million and go berserk in Iowa again and push the scoring record so far out no one gets it. And she's saying they made the decision to go to the WNBA. I look at somebody like Angel Reese. Angel Reese is the Bayou Barbie. A lot of her NIL and her fame, her stuff is attached to LSU and being, like I said, the Bayou Barbie. She's not even from the South. She's from Maryland. Like, she's LA, it's not attached, whatever. But let's say she gets drafted, she goes to Connecticut and she doesn't start off that high. Her value dips. Right, so a lot of these women, we're getting them as young now. We always seen them come in, but it didn't matter. They were getting crushed by the top schools. Juju Watkins out there putting up Caitlin Clark numbers as a freshman. she's probably going to threaten, if not break, Caitlin Clark's scoring record. Because she's doing this now as a freshman. She's only going to shoot more. She's only going to get better. She's only going to get more efficient. And now, unlike the men's game, Rob Dillingham would be great to come out of Kentucky next year. Build some star power. Instead, he's going to dip out. They're going to bring the next crop in. Don't know who they are at all. Because they don't have the Cooper flag or the Boozer brothers. But Juju Watkins is going to be in the USC jersey next year. Breaking news, my Negro. Juju Watkins is going to be in a USC jersey her junior year. And I'm willing to bet she's going to be in a USC jersey her senior year. She's going to be in the game. She's going to develop. Angel Reese, if she was a boy, leaves after that championship last year. SEC player of the year. Final Four player of the year. National champion. Social media darling. Everybody loves you. Everybody's following you. You're involved in a controversy with one of, if not the bigger name in college basketball. You're all over everywhere. You're doing all these magazine covers, doing all this stuff. You dip. And instead, she's at LSU this year, and I think she has a good chance of being at LSU next year. So you get this connection. It brings it back to the old school, who said the old school NBA, where you love Magic and the Lakers. You loved Kobe and the Lakers. You love Bird and the Celtics. You love Jordan and the Bulls. You could attach yourself to a favorite player because that favorite player was going to be on that team. So you could rep that team and love that player. With men college basketball, you really got to love the school. Because you could develop a favorite player and then they go to the draft. And now you got to love a new crop. And it's over and over and over again. And if the crop is down, the sport is down. Well, now women's college basketball is starting to outrate the men. I could love Iowa and Caitlin Clark. I can love LSU and Angel Reese. I could love Juju Watkins and USC. I could love Camila Cardoza in South Carolina. I could love Cameron Brink in Stanford. Like, I could love all these different groups. It could give the old school feel. It gives the attachment feel. And these ladies are better. And let me be honest, the basketball quality is better. The men's college game was a bunch of bad threes and dunks. I'm just going to be honest. It's a bad threes and dunks. The women's game, not a lot of three-point shooting. They're driving to the goal. They're setting back picks. They're hitting mid-range. It's beautiful basketball to watch, and they deserve to be in the forefront, which they are. So shout-out to the women's college basketball game. Kudos to them. They deserve everything that is coming for them and more. So shout-out to them. I hope the WNBA catches up. I hope the WNBA ultimately gets their boost in money so they can start paying these ladies what they deserve for the superstars that they are. But that is all I have for you today. Thank you guys for rocking with me for a little over an hour. Like I said, the Just in Time Sports Podcast available on wherever you get your podcasts. Also, follow us on social media. The social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports on all of your social medias. X, Instagram, Facebook, The Stunt, Threads. We are everywhere, so make sure you follow that. Of course, like I said last week, I will drop the link to B-Roy's latest album in the album description. And of course, I will start attaching the YouTube show link whenever the YouTube show is uploaded. But that is all I have for you today. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.